Good evening. Our subject is Buddha's enlightenment, and as expressed in the Heart Sutra, as in our tradition, which comes from the material that was gathered together as Buddha lived and after he died. That was a long time ago. But even today, Buddha's enlightenment is celebrated every year. We don't know when, seems arbitrary because we don't know, but it actually, I think, that December was chosen because for the same reason that Jesus' birth was chosen for December and many other celebrations of light. Light and birth and rebirth. In the Soto Zen tradition, the 8th of December is Buddha's Enlightenment Day. So that's today. All over the world, people are sitting Zazen. It's not celebrated the way Buddha's birthday is with a big celebration. The celebration is to sit a lot, really, really hard. And the tradition is on the last night of the sesshin, and it's usually a 7 or 10 day sesshin, on the last night you stay up all night. With the hope that when you finish in the morning, you look up and see the star and it all comes clear, as it did for Buddha. They're sitting real hard in Chikoji right now. Donalyn is a part of that. And a lot of people, I expect. They're sitting at Hokoji. They're sitting at Hakubai. All the places that I know, people are sitting Rohatsu Sesshin. So it's good timing for us. I bought this book because it tells different stories about the Buddha's enlightenment. He described it in a number of different ways, and I thought you would find that interesting since he's describing it in terms of what we've been talking about the Four Noble Truths and about the interbeing or the interconnected circle of transformation. One of them is called the attainment of three true knowledges. And the way they're attained is through meditation. And he describes what is really what meditation is, the initial feeling of being very much a body and being sort of happy just to be there, and then how that changes all by itself and gradually becomes more and more confident and less thinking the longer we sit, until finally it's just being there, just entirely being there. And not getting, he says, I allowed no pleasure as arose in me to gain power over my mind. If we're sitting and we begin to think, oh, wow, this is really great, wow, oof, then it's really not Zazen. It's more about letting go bit by bit, being completely physically present and letting whatever comes, go. And having done that, he had the three true knowledges. These are very interesting. The first one is that he understood how life transforms continually and that his own life was a part of that transformation. It's often seen as reincarnation, and you can read it that way as, and he says, oh, I saw my life in the past and it was many, all these different things that I was. But it's certainly true for anybody that if we think about how life came to us, we've come through life up to this point. And every kind of life has lived through our living, or we have lived through every kind of life. And then having seen that about himself, he suddenly saw that everything else was like that too. That everything else was life coming and transforming and morphing into other things, and all through time and all through space that this is happening. It's really mind-blowing. And then the third one, I directed my mind to the knowledge of exhaustion of taints. I directed my knowledge as it actually is, that that is suffering, that this is the origin of suffering, that this is the cessation of suffering, and that this is the way leading to the cessation of suffering. I had direct knowledge as it actually is, that these are taints, that this is the origin of taints, that this is the cessation, and that this is the way leading to the cessation of taints. Knowing thus and seeing thus, my heart was liberated from the taint of sensual desire, from the taint of being, and from the taint of ignorance. When liberated, there came the knowledge, it's liberated. The holy life has been lived out. What has to be done was done. There's no more of this to come. Ignorance was banished and true knowledge arose. So the third wisdom was the Four Noble Truths. With those kind of visions that he had before. Comes right back down inside again. But then the dependent arising certainly comes up in the next version of it, where he says, I thought, what is not there when no aging and death come to be? With the cessation of what is there, cessation of aging and death. Then with ordered attention I came to understand, when there is no birth, no aging and death come to be. With cessation of birth, there is cessation of aging and death. When there is no being, no birth comes to be. When there is no clinging, no being comes to be. When there is no craving, no clinging comes to be, etc. I thought, this is the path to enlightenment that I have now reached. That is to say, and then he says it all over again. He says it about four times just on these two pages in different ways. He also, having gained enlightenment, so-called, the first words that he said was a poem. Seeking but not finding the house builder, I traveled through the round of countless births. Oh, painful is birth ever and again. House builder, you have now been seen. You shall not build the house again. Your rafters have been broken down. Your ridgepole is demolished too. My mind has now attained the uniform nirvana. and reach the end of every kind of craving. So we've come to the no cognition, also no attainment part of this sutra. And while we're passing these around, I will tell you how we chanted at Zen Center on Saturday. I took my granddaughter. My granddaughter decided she wanted to learn how to sit with no encouragement from me. She just announced that that's what she wanted to do. So I offered to take her to San Francisco Zen Center because she lives in the city. And they were celebrating the end of their sesshin, celebrating Buddha's enlightenment. And the way they celebrate was to take the big double drum. They have a big double taiko drum, huge. And they set up drummers on each side, and they encouraged everybody in the... There were lots of people there, lots and lots. And while they were drumming to this strange kind of rhythm, we all chanted the Heart Sutra at the top of our lungs. Everybody was shouting it in English. No, it wasn't. It was in Japanese, Sino-Japanese. Kanji zai! Well, very, very loud. It was very fun. It was not the way you would expect to hear the sutra ever, but it was very fun. It was like this kind of, great relief. Oh, it's done and it's wonderful and here we are. So there are lots of ways that this sutra serves, and that's certainly one of them. Could I have what's left over? Thank you. So, cognition is wisdom, our seeing through, that Buddha achieved, you could say. Knowledge, the knowledge of where he came from and how everything came and is coming and going continually. It's wisdom. And, of course, the Heart Sutra is saying there isn't any. No wisdom. And also no attainment. Because, of course, Buddha's enlightenment is considered an attainment. He attained enlightenment and became a Buddha. The Heart Sutra says also no attainment. I think that's the most helpful of the whole Heart Sutra in many ways for us as we sit, because often the tendency when we sit is to try to attain something. Even if we know we're not supposed to be attaining enlightenment or getting somewhere or any of those things, there's some kind of human tendency of wanting something. That's sort of the basis of us, is wanting, some kind of desire. Goes into our sitting and then, oh, but there's nothing to attain. Oh, thank goodness, I don't have to try so hard. Can relax a little bit and enjoy the sitting. Let it be what it is rather than trying to get somewhere with it. So there are some interesting things here that people have said. Kanza is a very famous first real authority on Mahayana Buddhism, the first English translator and thinker about it. And what he's saying is that all these no's, this series of negations, it's important to note, doesn't mean that it's erasing everything or throwing it all away. It's trying to point to what can't be talked about. If there is no wisdom and there is no attainment, what is there? What is the is of it? So Mel Weitzman says, seeing impermanence and egolessness is the wisdom called prajnaparamita, which means there's no one to see reality. No one's there. And then he says, actually, there's no wisdom. And then he talks about Zazen. He says, I think of Zazen as an offering presenting ourselves to the universe. The universe penetrates and permeates our whole being, and there is no gap. That's what Buddha saw. And every time we sit, that's what's happening. So I remember the conversation that we had with Coben about the depending on, when he said it was really, depending is not exactly right. He said it's the way that a cup sits on the floor, or anything sits on the floor, that they fit perfectly. That's what it means. It's everything is as it's supposed to be because it all fits. It's not the cup a little bit off in some way or the floor a little bit off in some way. It's just the whole fitting together that is what depending means. And as far as awakening is concerned, he says delusion becomes awakening without changing its contents. So that's the same as I was saying before about the conditioned, the whole circle of conditioning that we're stuck in, it seems like, that we don't get out of it. It's that it all, as Coben said, turns to gold. So there's nowhere to go. And in a sense, nothing to escape from. And nothing to get. At the bottom, it tells you what perverted views are. And they're exactly the truths that Buddha was talking about. A perverted view is that anything is permanent, that satisfaction can be found in the world of stuff, that there's a permanent self or soul, and that things are desirable and worth striving for and clinging to. And any investment in any of these views is likely to produce fear and confusion, which leads us to seek other things to cling to, and each clinging brings about its own particular perverted view to further cloud the vision. So far apart from every perverted view, one dwells in nirvana. this is the heart, really, of it. The first part of it is kind of outlining, giving. Kind of overall picture, which includes all of Buddha's teaching. And this is about the bodhisattva life, bodhisattva practice, from here to the end. This is how we do. So are there questions? Britt?
In the perverted views in number 2 and 4, is the world of stuff, does that include people and relationships and maybe things
are desirable, are people and relationships things? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Of course, everything is desirable for us. You know, we're driven by desire. And desires, all the main desires are our survival desires. So it's essence of practice is acknowledging those. It doesn't mean not to relate, not it at all. It just means to not cling to any of it. Because then we misunderstand what's there and think it's solid. And nothing is solid. Julian?
So could clinging be defined as holding to the one of these perverted views? I mean,
clinging is not letting go.
I'm just thinking how, I mean, as human beings, we kind of like need to have goals, for example, like, mm-hmm. you know, wake up in the morning, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Like, but I think this is pretty practical because if you don't cling, it becomes a bit more obvious what needs to be done in a way.
Yeah. Yeah, we're not so cloudy and so confused.
Or at least we can also be able to take the little bumps when something is
Yeah, exactly. Wendy?
I believe it was last week you said something about even the Dharma. We can't even stand on the Dharma. So it's
things
you don't cling to.
Well, that's Dharma. So it's kind of tricky.
Yeah.
But the truth is that we can't even hold on to the truth. Even though that we could say, I think, that the truth is holding on to us in some sense.
Well, anyway, I was thinking, you know, of the kind of the evolution of Soto Zen in the United States, and is that reflecting the nature of the Dharma to change our...
Culturally, I see what you mean. Is there? It's a very interesting question, actually. That's what a lot of people are asking. There is something that is transmitted in ourself. We transmit to ourself, really. Although we speak about being transmitted. Coben said if you talk about being transmitted, you have to speak about being transmitted by the grass and the trees, by the houses and the motorcycles, by everything in your life. It's always transmitting to us, informing us, enlightening us. We are being continually penetrated, in Mel's words, by the universe, you could say. So in that sense, that truthfulness, truth, no, of things as they are, things as it is Dharma. But Dharma has many meanings, and so it means the truth of the Buddha's teaching, which means all this material that we inherited, which is philosophical, scientific, it's logical and psychological, and it has many, many levels, all of which we could call versions of truth. So what comes to America is people are always talking about it, how sorting out the cultural aspects of it from the Tibetan and the Japanese and the Vietnamese and the Korean. I mean, we have many different traditions, all of which are called Buddhism, all of which are based on the Dharma. So it's kind of interesting how we understand this. There's a move in the American Soto Zen organization. There's a letter in my computer now from them. They asked every teacher in the Soto Zen tradition in America to explain their transmission. And most people have a pretty conventional transmission. They go through the training in a monastery or a Zen center. They become ordained, and then they there's a whole set of steps that you take, that you go through, and with practicing with your teacher. And at the very end, the teacher offers you transmission, and the transmission is a week-long set of activities, mostly sitting and bowing. So if you're taken to Tassajara for it, then you sit most of the time and bow to all the different altars, and also do some writing out of the lineage in various ways. Very intricate, very complicated, and very difficult. It has to be perfect, and it's big and hard to do. And if you can accomplish all that in a week, then you've given a little special secret midnight ceremony in which you are honored as having achieved something, or having... So, not everybody's transmission is like that, and in our tradition, it certainly hasn't been that way. So we're all writing to each other, all of Coben's students, saying, how shall we answer these questions? So, and we really don't know. We've been accepted already, so it's not like they're going to kick us out. But it's hard to explain, because Coben's understanding of transmission was not a ceremony, and it wasn't a set of steps either. It was a recognition, a deep heart recognition of the truth, of one's own truth, which is the truth of everything. And it's something that between the teacher and the student is understood. It's not like the teacher gives the student something, it's that they recognize each other. We both see this, we're both it. That's how it happens, that's how it is. So it can be very informal. Bob Watkins, who was one of Coben's first students, wrote to Coben's brother after Coben died and said, "No, I don't know about this transmission. Coben gave me a few papers, but I never did a ceremony or anything." And Hojo-sama wrote back and he said, "Well, you practiced with him for 45 years. Don't you think something happened in those times?" So, it's tricky. A little bit tricky for us. Coben left us holding the bag in a way. And I joined the Soto organization because I wanted to make sure that my students had some kind of authorization, that if that was important in the future, we should set it now so that there are no questions. Because there were a lot of questions in the beginning for me and for some of my Dharma brothers and sisters. I was part of the American Zen Association in the very beginning, and then they kicked me out. They decided I wasn't really, you know. And then they invited me back in again, so. None of these things is, in the end, we're all going to die. And none of these things are so important. It's practice is important. Authenticity of practice is the most important thing. But we need each other, and we need to understand and work things out together. So I don't think I'll live long enough to see what American Zen is going to be. It's just a kind of mush right now, but who knows what it's going to be like in another 50 years or so.
You're too much in the center of it.
Yeah. Yes, that's true. That's true. Julie?
So do you have, like, a concern for, I don't know, maintaining some kind of integrity in the tradition, or I don't know, like I could see, you know, what we've been, you know, reading in the Heart Sutra, that there's, but I don't know, I guess it's just a question that comes up for me, like, we're concerned about what makes the tradition so strong, just to be a, end up being a mine or something.
Well, you can't mind Zazen. And that's the basis. So, and everything is based on that. So my understanding is that we concentrate on Zazen practice and let that tell us how to develop this work and share it. Not make some kind of institution out of it, not create some kind of new story about it, but just to learn better how to live with each other in the world and to see it as it is. to see not just the hard, dark way of the world, but to see the light of the world, how it shines, and carry all of it as we can in our own lives. Well, it's after time.